The children of Israel are taught not only that they live in a world that can provide for each and every person's needs, but also that the Lord helps those who will help themselves. They must work to gather, but what they gather is a gift. In a world beyond scarcity and grasping, the choice is not freedom versus food and drink, but grateful trust versus foolish pride or ignorant despair. Welcome to 10 Minute Mitzvah, Episode 39, The Oldest Chocolate and the Sabbath Offering. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Rabbi Soloveitchik's year-long 10-minute mitzvah podcast is generously sponsored by Ivan and Susanna Kaufman.
It has been described online as a story about some of the oldest sweets on earth, a case of candy, chocolate, that was created over a century ago. The Daily Mail reports, quote, "Knobbly and discolored, these chocolates have seen better days. But what they no doubt lack in taste, they more than make up for in historic value. The misshapen sweets date back 106 years, making them contenders for the title of oldest chocolates in the world. Hailing from Scottish town St. Andrews, they were made especially to mark the coronation of King Edward VII, the successor to Queen Victoria, and come in a decorated tin announcing Coronation Day on June 26, 1902. And they have lasted considerably longer than the king's reign, which ended with his death in 1910. Alongside the chocolates is an old newspaper cutting dating back to their 50th anniversary. It explains that the sweets were presented to schoolgirl Martha Grigg in August 1902. She mustered up the willpower to avoid eating the chocolates, instead keeping them as a souvenir. When she grew up, she handed the box down to one of her children, who in turn gave it to her own daughter, Frieda McIntosh. Ms. McIntosh also resisted temptation and has now passed the confectionery into the safe hands of the St. Andrews Preservation Trust, which aims to maintain character and history of the town," end quote. It is indeed a remarkable story, a remnant from a coronation long ago, a story of preservation and restraint. But in truth, there is a tale of preservation that is even more impressive, a story of an ethereally sourced edible substance that was preserved for much longer than 100 years, a story that relates not to the coronation of a king, but to a newly freed people learning to trust the King of Kings, a story of a food that never ended up misshapen, remained perfectly preserved, a food that is linked to a mitzvah in the temple, one which teaches us a great deal about what Shabbat is all about. The story of preservation appears in the book of Exodus. Israel, freed from slavery, begins to complain about its lack of food. Miraculously, manna falls from heaven, and some of the former slaves hurriedly hoard more than they need, still not trusting that God would provide. What is hoarded becomes spoiled. Then, on the day before Shabbat, suddenly, the Israelites are bequeathed what is known as lechem mishneh, literally double bread, meaning a double portion of manna. This manna, miraculously, is preserved until the next day, Shabbat, so that within that sacred time the Israelites need not gather, but may rest and mark God's bounty. We read, "On the sixth day they gather twice as much bread, two omers apiece. And when all the leaders of the congregation came and told Moses, he said to them, 'This is what the Lord has commanded. Tomorrow is a day of solemn rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake and boil what you will boil, and all that is left over lay by to be kept till the morning.' So they laid it by till the morning as Moses bade them, and it did not become foul, and there were no worms in it, as Moses said. Eat it today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, which is a Sabbath, there will be none." So Exodus tells us, but still, some Israelites, motivated less by faith from freedom miraculously bestowed then by memories of the hunger of slavery, went out to look. And the passage continues. "On the seventh day, some of the people went out to gather, and they found none. And the Lord said to Moses, 'How long do you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? See, the Lord has given you the Sabbath. Therefore, on the sixth day, he gives you bread for 2 days. Remain every man of you in his place. Let no man go out of his place on the seventh day.' So the people rested on the seventh day. Thus was the Sabbath observed, even before the Almighty made mention of it in the Ten Commandments declaimed at Sinai. But the preservation of the manna from one day to the next only set the stage for a more miraculous and more profound preservation. For God goes on to command Moses that a sample of manna be kept, so that long after Israel enters the land, it can remember this miracle, recalling the bounty of God." Again, Exodus. "Now the house of Israel called its name manna. It was like coriander seed white, and the taste of it was like wafers made with honey. And Moses said, 'This is what the Lord has commanded. Let an omer of it be kept throughout your generations, so that they may see the bread with which I fed you in the wilderness, when I brought you out of the land of Egypt. And Moses said to Aaron, take a jar and put an omer of manna in it, and place it before the Lord, to be kept throughout your generations. As the Lord commanded Moses, so Aaron placed it before the testimony to be kept. As I joked some time ago toward the beginning of my rabbinic career, this is one of the first cases of canned food in Jewish history. Manna kept in a jar. It is, if you will, a case of manna shevetz. But here we have manna that never went bad, that was preserved with the Ark of the Covenant, meant as an eternal reminder to Israel. But what is the lesson of which Israel is reminded? Surely, of course, that God cared for his covenant people. But there is more. Through the manna, Israel learned to trust in God day by day, and especially in advance of the Sabbath, when a double portion was bestowed. The lesson, as Leon Cass put it, quote, against the ex-slaves' despairing belief that food is preferable to freedom and that serving Pharaoh offered the surest guarantee of life, the children of Israel are taught not only that they live in a world that can provide for each and every person's needs, but also that the Lord helps those who will help themselves. They must work together, but what they gather is a gift. In a world beyond scarcity and grasping, the choice is not freedom versus food and drink, but grateful trust versus foolish pride or ignorant despair. End quote. Today, Jews traditionally bless the Sabbath meal over two loaves of bread, an obligation described in the Talmud, meant as a remembrance of the double portion of manna that fell from heaven on the day before the Sabbath. But this is not the only remembrance of this miracle. Along with the obligation of the twice daily offering in the temple, which we have previously described in an earlier episode of 10 Minute Mitzvah, an offering that was brought on behalf of all the people, another additional offering, known traditionally as Korban Musaf, the offering that is Musaf, added, is brought on Shabbat. In order to understand its symbolism, let us begin with the description of the daily offering. This is Numbers 28, verse 3. And you shall say to them, this is the offering by fire which you shall offer to the Lord, two male lambs a year old without blemish, day by day as a continual offering. The one lamb you shall offer in the morning, and the other lamb you shall offer in the evening. Two lambs every day. And here is what was brought on the Sabbath. Verse 9. On the Sabbath day, two male lambs a year old without blemish. Thus, on Sabbath, two additional lambs are included, so that there is a double offering. This, as the medieval Rabbi Shlomo ben Aderet notes, is a parallel to the doubling of the manna. And thus we might add that this mitzvah is not only a cultic rite, but an eternal reminder of the trust that the gift before the Sabbath was meant to inspire. The coronation chocolates of St. Andrews were not the only reminder of that event. The Daily Mail has further reported, quote, an uneaten 122-year-old chocolate bar made to mark the coronation of King Edward VII is tipped to sell for hundreds of pounds at auction. The antique chocolate was made by Rowan Trees in 1902 and comes in a tin decorated with portraits of King Edward and Queen Alexandra of Denmark. The original owner showed amazing self-control to not devour it at the time, with only a handful of antique chocolate bars from the period known to have survived. The intact chocolate still has some silver wrapping paper protecting it, but the buyer is advised not to eat it for health reasons. This seems wise. But according to the medieval rabbi, Rabbi Menachem Azaria of Pano, in the Messianic age, the jar of manna will be rediscovered, and at that moment it shall be opened and eaten. And the point, as I understand it, is that in a redeemed world, we will have learned the manna's lesson. We will no longer need it as a reminder. We will have learned to see all that we have as akin to the manna, as God's gift. And until that day arrives, it is on the Sabbath, as we bless the double bread, we remind ourselves to see the world through the lens of the Israelite miracles that were, as well as the miracles that are yet to be. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow, signing off.